Welcome to the Hairdryer Treatment Podcast, powered by Kevin Grogan Soccer, Soccer Coffee, and much more. Welcome to the show this week. Delighted to have Joe Bean back on. We're going to have a very interesting chat about the legendary manager, Brian Clough. So after the break, we'll go straight into that chat. The Hairdryer Treatment Podcast is proudly sponsored by Rezl. Rezl is the market-leading, academically validated VR training and cognitive development tool for elite football and is already installed at world-leading clubs. Rezl.com. Joe, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Really appreciate you coming in today. So we're going to talk about the legendary Brian Clough, who, you know, was one of the greatest managers of all time, really. We did a show recently about Bill Shankly, and a lot of our listeners requested that we do one on Brian Clough as well. So let's start talking about the legend. Started with managing in Derby, was a player originally, had a decent career with Middlesbrough, got capped with England a few times, got a bad injury, and then eventually got into management. So let's talk more about his management career, where he became a real legend. And he started in Derby.
Started in Derby in 1967. They were a second division side, low, not doing too good. They were in top flight football for quite some time and have been as far as second division, first division. But when he took them over, they were in dire straits. Shankly described him as taking on a pigsty. The baseball ground was in a mess. 67, he took them over. And won promotion after a couple of seasons. And then went on to play in the first division. Got fourth in his first year. And then actually won the title in 1972 season. Fantastic achievement, going from a lowly rated Midlands club to becoming the first division champions back then, first division. Very, very young, dynamic manager, outspoken, controversial, tons of panache. You could compare them a little bit to Jose Mourinho when he started out with the likes of Chelsea. But Clough was very, very very much ahead of his time, involved with updating the stands and player management, a huge disciplinarian, and at times got away with it back then, but at times, you know, carried on with players, for example, hitting players. He has been known to strike out at players. Wouldn't have been able to do it, by the way, without Peter Taylor.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So he obviously had an assistant, Peter Taylor, and, you know, he was really a massive part of the success that we're going to talk about. And it seemed like they were a great team. Clough was more so the manager, the motivator, picking the team, and really had that charisma, where Peter Taylor seemed to be behind the scenes more, understood the game very well, but was a brilliant recruiter. And the two of them made up a fantastic team. And it seemed like at Derby, that was the first indication that they were going to be very, very successful.
Peter Taylor, as Clough described himself as the shop window, and Peter Taylor was the goods in the background. Peter Taylor had a fantastic eye for recruiting players out of the lower divisions, and also bringing in players who were supposedly finished or at the end of their career. John McGovern was an important player that was part of that team, that setup.
Was he Scottish?
I believe so. He was with Clough very early on, and came with Clough basically to Derby. Ended up being the captain. And then the likes of Ray McFarland, the likes of Alan Hinton, Colin Todd, Kevin Hector, John O'Hare. I mean, these are all household names. Archie Gemmell, great footballer under Scotsman.
But they found a lot of these, you know, in their early days, when before they had actually been established players, and they kind of breeded them and molded them. And they were great at doing that, of finding players, bringing them in and building the system and getting players to buy into the kind of philosophy and the culture. And that's really why they had the success at Derby.
Yeah, Taylor was very much the man who brought those players in, and Clough basically whipped them into shape. Clough was a great man manager, as far as he could really get inside players. He could really turn players around. In fact, he believed, like Shankly, that he could hypnotise players and also, you know, imagine for them. But Taylor was definitely an assistant that was able to kind of curtail Clough. He was able to put constraints on Clough. He'd tell him when he was wrong, tell him when he was right. He'd tell him to shut his mouth and get on with the job at hand. And Clough needed that.
Yeah,
or Clough, whatever we want to call him. He needed that man management himself.
It seemed like Taylor nearly saved Brian Clough from himself as such. And with that success in Derby then, Clough was known to be very anti-establishment and ended up falling out with the chairman. And they handed in a letter of resignation, which was accepted. And it was very controversial at the time, but it actually led to the process of them eventually going to Nottingham Forest, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But just before we talk about that, we're just going to play a little clip here of Brian Clough just talking about his style of football and how he liked his teams to play football on the ground in a very decisive manner, passing and moving.
If God had wanted football played in the clouds, he'd have put a pitch up there and goalposts and all that type of thing. We believe it should be played on grass. It's as simple as that.
So a great little snippet there of Clough talking about how he kind of wanted to play football on the ground. He was very much a coach that wanted to play the right way and play attractive football.
Entertaining the crowds. He wanted to entertain his fans. Keeping the ball on the ground, keeping passes tidy, clean, getting it to the open man. You have to also, back then, you know, players have said, we didn't really do a lot of stuff in training as far as setting things up. But the uncanny ability of Peter Taylor to pick the right players to fit in the right position was a big part of how they played. The system that they had, whatever the shape was, Taylor was able to find players that fit right in there, and it worked for them, and they just kept it simple. The more simple, the better. And that was his philosophy on the game.
And a lot of coaches and managers were on record saying that they love watching Nottingham Forest play. This is the team they eventually go to. But whatever team they managed, they always enjoyed watching his teams because of the way they played.
They played really, really good football. And you could see that in the Derby setup, very much so. He just got too big for his boots there a little bit. He started doing television appearances. He started to make a huge name for himself, not only in the game, but outside of the game. He did go to Brighton after Derby. They didn't last long there. And then Leeds, of all teams to go to, Leeds United.
Now, this was an interesting one because they split up as a duo then. And Clough went to Leeds and Taylor didn't. Now, the backstory of the Leeds one was Don Revie was the manager there. And they were the best team in the country. They were dominating. And Don Revie left to go and take the England job, which was obviously a massive job. But Don Revie and Brian Clough never got on. And it was very public knowledge that they didn't get on. So it was very controversial when Leeds came in and hired Brian Clough as the manager. And no one really knew how it would go. And it turned into a bit of a saga, correct?
It was hell on earth for Clough for those 44 days. The players didn't want him there. The staff didn't want him there. When he went in, one of his first meetings, he told all the players who had won medals to throw them in the bin, that they won them by cheating. Johnny Giles was disgusted with the things that he said. And he just basically lashed them all out of it. not the way to start at all. Taylor had been there, I don't think he would have went in that way.
And that kind of goes back to the point that he was very eccentric, but he needed Taylor to kind of save him from himself. And without Taylor, he was a bit of a loose cannon, you know. And obviously, as you said, going into the dressing room and telling them to throw the medals in the bin because they did it in a dishonest way isn't a great start to your managerial
no.
stint at a club.
No, it's not. They actually did an interview with Clough and Don Revie.
And we're going to actually play a bit of that later on so that listeners get a taste of it.
Yeah, it's interesting watching it. You see the kind of person Clough is, where when he's speaking about certain things, he's full of it. And at the same time, he can switch into this charming talker. And he does it with Revie, who's, by the way, just appointed the English manager. And he's called him good lad. It's so funny watching it. And
Don and he got Revie, the better of him in that interview, I think. Yeah.
Oh, well, Revie wanted to strangle him at one point, and the host describes it that way. Revie was 7 years a senior. So here you have this upstart talking to the English manager. You know, in a way that he kind of wraps him around his finger a little bit. But like, Clough didn't get off to a great start. It was never going to work out. And he had, you know, he had lashed the Leeds team out of it, and Revie out of it, even before he took that job.
Of course, Johnny Giles was in the team, the famous Irish player.
Yeah.
Billy Bremner.
Oh, yeah.
They had a fantastic team. And really, it was a tough job to come into, but really he just needed to continue on what Don Revie had done. But he probably tried to change too much, and maybe there was too much ego involved. And it was famous because it only lasted in and around 44 days. And there was eventually a book written about it called The Damned United, and then a movie was made about it, which was fantastic. And it was kind of, there was a bit of controversy over the book because it was kind of fact based on fiction, or fiction based on fact, or however you want to put it. And the families of the likes of Clough and Giles and Don Revie, or not Don Revie, Billy Bremner, weren't very happy with it. And I think there was a couple of lawsuits there, but because two of the people I just mentioned, Clough and Billy Bremner, had passed away, they couldn't actually sue, they couldn't actually find someone liable. But I think Johnny Giles won his case. So it was very interesting, and it's a big story in football, those 44 days.
It's a massive story, but Clough said, listen, there's no way can anyone do anything in 44 days. It's just not enough time. They gave him, I believe, a settlement.
He said it was the first time he was ever properly comfortable financially, because he had a contract, and because they got rid of him so early that he was entitled to a settlement. And obviously then, kind of after that saga, it does lead into the Nottingham Forest days, which is the main bulk of the story, and Peter Taylor comes back into that. But before we kind of go into that, Joe, let's just play this clip of the famous Revie Clough interview. It's very, very interesting.
Place the best manager on record, or by record, in the Football League, then obviously Leeds had to get somebody that was, you know, slightly special. I don't want to be blasé, conceited, but I'm not sure who they could have got to improve on his record.
You were the best man for the job, you thought?
I believed I was, and obviously the Leeds board did.
A great audio there of Brian Clough saying that he is special, not unsimilar to Jose Mourinho calling himself the special one. So that obviously didn't work out, Joe, and then they reunited, Clough and Taylor, and went to Nottingham Forest, where they did some of the most remarkable things in the history of football.
He went to Forest. He was there for a short while, and then Taylor got on board. At this point, he had brought in some of his, loyal servants, and it wasn't if we'll get promotion; it was when we'll get promotion. And that's exactly what happened. They surpassed what they did at Derby. And they did it the Clough way again. First division title. They won the title in great fashion after winning promotion in 77. They started in 75. 77 promotion. Won the title. And then out of nowhere, two back-to-back European Cups. Incredible.
Which is now the Champions League.
Yeah. And nobody saw that coming. Of course, Clough would say otherwise. And then you had players like Larry Lloyd, Kenny Burns, a forward, a big, bustling, aggressive centre forward, turned into one of the best centre halves in the game at the time. Larry Lloyd, another player who was supposed to be finished, and of course Gary Bartels, another player out of the non-league, and then Peter Shilton. Peter Shilton was a player, a goalkeeper, described as Taylor as one of the best in the world and would win you games. And then, you know, we also inherited the likes of John Robertson, a fantastic winger. He went on to buy Trevor Francis.
For a record fee.
Yeah, Trevor Francis, the first million pound buy.
And just for our listeners, when the world's media were there to do the press conference for that signing, Clough showed up with a squash racket in his squash gear because he had just come from a game of squash and pretended to hit Trevor Francis on the head.
Yeah, he was notorious for his game of squash across the road, and was actually playing in a game one time with a journalist who wasn't a bad player, hit a ball on him that Clough couldn't get to, and Clough wasn't too pleased. He loved his game of squash, and he loved going around in his sweat gear, in his green top, typical Clough. He also had a very, very good back line, very strong back line. He also had a good working midfield, and his forward line were always really, really top notch. And Trevor Francis became one of the best buys ever by scoring that winner in the European Cup. Cross coming from Robertson.
How big was that, though? Back-to-back European Cups, Champions Leagues. Like, I mean, that's phenomenal, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For such a small club, we're talking, comparing to the likes of, you know, Madrid, you know, Inter, Milan, Liverpool even, with their record in the European Championships, in the European tournament. Incredible feat. And What a team. The likes of Alan Hansen and Souness admitted, you know, that they still thought that they were the best around.
They were Liverpool players
at
the time.
Yeah, Liverpool players admitted that they were very, very tough to break down. Despite the good football that they played, they were extremely difficult to break down. And the Clough has said, the basis of all great teams is a clean sheet. So, you know, they had a fantastic side. Nottingham Forest, they were great to watch. They were also very good at you know, keeping things real, keeping things like down to earth. Clough never allowed for complacency, wouldn't allow it, and in many ways he worked on relaxing his players. He worked on preparing his players. He was a great believer in that. He was one of the first to really understand that, listen, it's not all about, you know, running around and working hard, training crazy all season. It doesn't work. And he was one of the first managers to truly understand that. And of course, he was one of the first managers to get out on the field and train with his team.
And he was there was a lot of discipline in his teams. Like, they never got yellow cards and red cards. Very, very rarely got yellow cards. But he was big into playing the right way, being disciplined and all that kind of stuff.
Huge pride in playing in an honourable way. Huge pride in not getting those cards. And he was a big, big disciplinarian when it came to that stuff. And he learned all that when he was with Sunderland as a player. A guy called Alan Brown was very much a disciplinarian and gave Clough a bit of a hard time trying to catch him, coming in late, etc. But that's where he very much admits his influences on being a disciplinarian came from. The Clough way. I mean, there was one time in Forest when a player in the first half tried to do a couple of step overs and fell over the ball, Nigel Jemson, and at half time Clough stood him up, punched him in the stomach and said, I don't want you to do that again. Do you realise that your mother and father are in the stands watching this game? And that was typical Clough, reverse psychology.
And during this period, like, he was such a big name because he was charismatic and he was having all the success. And we have to obviously reiterate that the fact that Peter Taylor was back in there with him helped massively. But he was also doing a lot of TV work and, you know, analysing games. And he was just a big celebrity at the time. And there was a very famous clip that we're going to play now of him talking about Muhammad Ali, which is very interesting. So we'll just play that now.
time to meet the special guests I mentioned at the start of the programme. And we're delighted to welcome Muhammad Ali, particularly as he has something rather important to say to all Big Match viewers and to one contributor in particular.
I'm Muhammad Ali. The world know who I am. They know I'm confident and they know I talk. But there's some fella in London, England named some Brian Clough, some soccer player or something. Anyway, I heard all the way in America, heard all the way in Indonesia that this fella talks too much. They say he's another Muhammad Ali. There's just one Muhammad Ali. And I want you to, whoever you are, you're not a fighter, and you don't take my job. I'm the talker. Now, Clough, I've had enough. Stop it.
Well, are you going to stop it?
No, I want to fight him.
Fantastic audio there, obviously, of Muhammad Ali, the famous boxer. Talking about Brian Clough, and Brian Clough's response again shows his charisma. So Joe, we talked about massive success there in Forest, and then it started to go downhill, and the start of that was the breakup between Clough and Taylor. Let's talk a bit about that.
From 78 to 80, winning back-to-back European Cups, things were going okay. They were doing all right. But around 82, Taylor decided that he was to leave, and the partnership broke up. Taylor went ahead and wrote a book, a really good book, by the way, about his time with Clough. He didn't tell Clough about it, and that would have been the start of a breakup that got very sour and very bitter between them. They didn't speak at all.
He went on to manage, I believe, Derby, yeah. Maybe, and he signed one of the Forest players without talking to Clough about it.
John Robertson. And that was seen as described as the straw that broke the camel's back. But they had a huge falling out. Taylor went on to write some stuff about Clough, says some things about him in the book, exposes everything, basically. And it just never mended. It's hard to believe that such two great mates, Pete as he called them, such two great mates fell out that way. And when Taylor passed away, Clough called his family, was very, very upset. They attended his funeral, obviously, but he was very, very upset. And in many, many ways, he would have been somewhat lonely without him. And at that time, he stayed on at Forest. He was with Forest.
But it started going downhill then.
You know, that's pretty much publicised a lot in the media, that it went downhill, and it did. But he did manage to get into some finals, some cup finals, and hold our own a little bit in the league. But it just wasn't the same. And then he started to fall into a little bit of drinking. And he'd been drinking, by the way. He'd been drinking for years.
He started heavily drinking,
yeah.
What you'd probably a full-blown alcoholic as such, and lots of kind of sad footage of him near the end of his management, kind of where he doesn't look well at all.
He's fallen into corruption now. He's dealing with the bungs, the bung issue where managers were receiving money under the table with transfers and agents and buys, and he was he was investigated. He was also somewhat investigated on selling tickets, and which got into the black market. We're talking thousands upon thousands of pounds here, and some trouble broke out in some games, and the tickets were traced back to Clough and his involvement with tickets, and so things started to go a little bit wayward for him, a little bit crazy for him. It's an ending that, you know, not a lot of people want to talk about it. They want to remember him as for the legend that he was, as far as the game, as far as you described as the greatest manager that never actually coached, the greatest English manager that never actually coached England. But
he went and he just explained he there was talk at one point in his heyday that he would get the England job, and he probably should have got it. But because of his character and personality, they never gave it to him. But I think it, like, as much as a legend as he was, I think it's important to highlight the alcoholism and maybe the bit of corruption. And just, you know, he was a flawed character in many ways, but he was a flawed genius.
Very much so. A flawed genius. Described as a genius by many, many of his peers and fellow managers, etc. He had a liver transplant. He started having major problems with his liver. Had a liver transplant. Was doing well then after that.
But obviously, just to backtrack there, he stepped down, decided him and his family, when it got kind of very bad health-wise, decided to retire. Yeah. And this, probably the saddest part of it all was that after all his success in leagues, cups, and then obviously the European Cups that he won, when he retired, they got relegated that season that he retired. So he ended his career on a very low point, which was very, very sad.
He did. They were relegated. Forrest were relegated in his last season from the Premier. And he admitted that had he had not been drinking, he probably would have seen a lot more. He even admitted that he didn't remember. He couldn't remember recalling the game in its entirety, which he was able to do almost every single moment in detail. He lost that as well. He admitted that. And this, you know, he was striking out at people in the pitch raid that time. He struck out at his own fans. And he still had, you could still see the panache in there. But there was other times when you could see that he was lost for words, when he was questioned about his investigations. You could see that he wasn't as quick to respond. And he got ill. He got very, very ill. And then he continued on to you know, eventually die of stomach cancer. You know, it was just a sad ending. It was a big loss to the game, but he definitely lost touch with the game. He definitely lost touch with you know, the Brian Clough way. And you must remember, he's now dealing in the Premiership with player power. And that became a big part of management. And Clough was, as well as he did in certain cup tournaments, he had kind of lost his way with players.
Well, I think, you know, he was such a legendary manager of his time. Then time started to change as he got a bit older. And then I think with his illness and the alcoholism and things like that, he kind of took his eye off the ball. And then obviously with the falling out with Peter Taylor, he had lost that kind of sidekick there, and I think all of them combinations, and he just struggled near the end, and it was definitely time for him to retire. And just sad that they obviously got relegated. But to finish up, Joe, in terms of the legacy, I mean, we talked about a flawed genius there, and that's probably what he was, but for someone to take, and I think Forrest was his real glory days, took them from the second division to the top division, won the league, won back-to-back Champions Leagues in essence, will be remembered as one of the greatest managers of all time. Very charismatic. And, you know, we're just going to play it out now with a little clip and a tribute, Joe. But he has to go down as one of the greats.
His legacy is incredible. He's got statues at Forest, Derby. He's got roads named after him. From Forest to Derby, there's a stretch of road, it's called the A52, and it's called the Brian Clough Way. He also has a tram in the Nottingham Express Transit called the Brian Clough Train. His legacy is incredible. European Manager of the Year, English Manager of the Year, European Cups. He's just been admired across the board, particularly Forest and Derby, for his outstanding achievements. And then, you know, you can't ignore the Brian Clough top 11 before you play your clip there. Peter Shilton, Viv Anderson, Roy McFarland, Colin Todd, Stuart Pearce, Martin O'Neill, John McGovern, Roy Keane, who's now assistant at Forest, Trevor Francis, John O'Hare and John Robertson. Some great players in there.
One of the greats of all time.
We dictators like to talk a lot.
complex.
We all like to be liked.
A purist.
Play it on the green grass, not in the air.
Get in there. That's what I pay you for.
A lover of the simple things.
One thing you haven't got in football is time.
And at times, his own reflection.
Now, Clough, I've had enough. Stop it.
Clough tells it all.
Mid-70s, late-70s.
He turned the average into the extraordinary.
He captured that decade.
The portrayal of Brian Clough in that book.
But the truth
is absolutely outrageous.
Isn't always black and white.
I would like the supreme job.
It's a bit cold, isn't it?
He continues to play the lead role.
Who do you think you are?
Brian Clough, not my type of man.
From inside the FA.
There wasn't a vote. The decision was made beforehand.
To the heart of the darkness at Leeds.
I wanted to teach Clough a lesson.
I want to be like me.
From Derby to the Bernabeu and back again.
Jesus Christ.
Through the eyes of those who really knew.
I don't know if somebody's messing about up there.
This is Clough, the afterlife of Brian.
The Hairdryer Treatment Podcast is proudly sponsored by Rezl. Rezl is the market-leading, academically validated VR training and cognitive development tool for elite football and is already installed at world-leading clubs. Rezl.com.